Chapter 19. Who's Ray Epeace? The best way to control the opposition is to control it ourselves. Lenin. I will wrap up on the strategy analysis and swamp rat hunting front with Ray Epps. And who's he, you might ask? Well, to start with, Google his name and trawl through the New York Times stories on him. It seems from their early reports that he was a most wanted man for his obvious part in the insurrection of January 6, 2021. But then he seems to have slid off the radar and is now, apparently, a target of right-wing nuts, with little interest in him being shown by those formerly lauded as the untouchables. There are many videos of him inciting crowds, so why are the FBI not wearing out shoe leather hunting him down? Or are they worried he might skedaddle on his multi-seat golfing buggy on which he was filmed when a January 6th witness tracked down the elusive Mr. Epps? Compared to many MAGA terror types still held and awaiting charges, his offense is more serious. Calling on crowds to break into the Capitol building, even stating that he might get jailed for incitement, and later seen in a crowd that was battling with the police. No. He was clearly inciting the Trump crowd, and doing it so obviously that many wiser souls called Epps out as a Fed. However, he is still free to walk the streets, and you and I can guess why. Yawn. Nothing to see here, unless you are one of the dumb good old boys fumbling around for reds under the beds. It does not take a grizzled detective from the Bronx to see what he was doing there that day and on whose behalf. The release to Tucker Carlson of CCTV of the events has undermined the case against the QAnon character, seen therein as a lone outsider being escorted and guided by two police officers around empty corridors in the Capitol. They even opened doors for him. This was not an armed and violent individual rampaging around the hallowed halls. An oddball, yes, but a threat to national security. No, that's the feds. Yes, I think it is quite possible that the FBI was, at a minimum, directing useful patsies to advance a narrative to tie Trump to an insurrection. As the Italian says, we apply the law to our enemies and interpret it for our friends. Particularly in courts in the Democratic nirvana of Washington, D.C., Epps wanders free, along with many other suspicious characters, while Trump is constantly hounded, and Michael Byrd from the law enforcement team inside the Capitol faces no charges for killing the unarmed Ashley Babbitt. Most tellingly, why was the CCTV coverage of the event withheld for so long, even that with no special security ramifications if released? In addition, why did Senator Chuck Schumer and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, those most responsible for the security of the legislators, stop the recommended National Guard support from deploying to the Capitol that day? I assess that it was all part of a setup, a day that some planners no doubt hoped would end up like another infamous day. In fact, it will more likely be the day that many Americans woke up to the reality of their hollowed-out but fortified democracy. The wheels of the people's justice grind slowly, but they will grind. The men handling the provocateurs that day have little to learn from Lenin about controlling the opposition. This is something that they have deep and wide experience with already. Think about bait cars loaded with goodies and covert cameras and remote locking devices that are left unlocked in high crime areas in U.S. cities, all to entice the less sharp of the tools out there to clear the streets of potential offenders. Then, move up the scale to state governor kidnapping, loaded up with FBI agents and assets, in one reported case, 17 out of the 20 involved, inventing, inciting, and fostering criminal plans. Now, you are not far from seeing how they can use similar tactics, con artists, and confident direction to incite a riot to pin on a not just disliked, but dementedly hated political opponent. Previous Russiagate scams and the like had failed to hold back the flood, so the team probably decided to get heavy and load up with smart lefty lawyers to look at ways to bolster the scenarios. How could things go wrong? They are in the process of finding out, which poses a danger to the system, not just the conspirators involved. You may recall that I mentioned that there were some jury decisions that might be of interest and could go some way to opening minds to narratives that are not pushed by the mainstream outlets owned by agenda-setting billionaires and their administrative elite. Let's start with a man accused of leading a CIA gun team in Dallas the day that Kennedy was assassinated by the lone gunman, Mr. Oswald, or the Patsy, as he called himself. My apologies for wandering into this territory, but the court case concerns a dark arts expert and former senior officer in the CIA, E. Howard Hunt, who, prior to the court case, had been imprisoned for leading the team plumbing for Nixon. In this instance, in 1985, he lost a civil action on appeal in a Florida courthouse, with the jury deciding that he had indeed been in Dallas that day, the day when everyone remembers where they were. You can check out the details. United States District Court, Southern District of Florida, Miami, Florida, case number 80-1121, Civ JWK, E. Howard Hunt, plaintiff versus Liberty Lobby, defendant. Verdict as of February 6, 1985. We, the jury, find for the defendant, Liberty Lobby, and against the plaintiff, E. Howard Hunt. The case was won by the attorney Mark Lane, who wrote up the events in plausible denial, Lane 1992, including what the jury forewoman, Leslie Armstrong, had to say. After the verdict, she met the press and gave her reasons for the jury finding against the former senior CIA officer and disgraced former felon. As Lane noted, "The evidence was clear," she said. "The CIA had killed President Kennedy. Hunt had been part of it, and that evidence, so painstakingly presented, should now be examined by the relevant institutions of the United States government so that those responsible for the assassination might be brought to justice." Almost all the national news media joined in surrounding the historic verdict with an iron curtain through which the news of the verdict could not filter. Virtually every book publisher in the United States refused to publish this book. I bet you had not read that before, unless you have also worked your way through plausible denial. So the CIA was found guilty in a U.S. court of involvement in the killing of the president, and the press ensured that the news could not filter through to you. And this jury was not the only one to be presented with court-standard evidence, not like that which we more slapdash intelligence types often must go on, to find that the CIA had been involved in another infamous assassination in the land of the free. Of course, not much covered in the press, then or since. The second significant case was heard from the 15th of November to the 8th of December, 1999, in a court in Memphis, a short distance from where Martin Luther King was shot. In a wrongful death lawsuit initiated by the King family, 70 witnesses testified. They described a sophisticated government plot that involved the FBI, the CIA, the Memphis police, mafia intermediaries, and an Army Special Forces sniper team. The 12 jurors, 6 black and 6 white, returned after 2.5 hours of deliberation with a verdict that King had been assassinated by a conspiracy that included agencies of his own government. That's pretty significant. A famous conspiracy case is proven in court, but you don't know about the verdict. Welcome to the world of the strategy analyst. No aliens or Freemasons here, just government agencies, their useful tools, and criminal intermediaries. James W. Douglas attended the case throughout and reported on it in his excellent JFK and the Unspeakable, published by one of the Big Five publishing houses, Simon & Schuster, so hardly a conspiracy theory hothouse. So we have heard from several U.S. presidents that there are powerful interests, complexes, call them what you like, that manipulate events and thus our world. Now we have seen that two U.S. juries have been presented with amazing but uncomfortable truths, following which they came to little publicized verdicts identifying the complicity of infamous three-letter agencies in the murder of a sitting U.S. president and of an iconic civil rights leader. These are so incredible that the agencies and governments involved would naturally not prefer these facts to be openly paraded, understanding that if enough of you believed that CIA, FBI, police, and military personnel were guilty of complicity and involvement in the assassination of two such historic figures, the whole elite-driven system would disintegrate. With so many gravy trains to protect, so many reputations to polish, and so many crimes to cover up, it's no wonder that they are ready to lean all over or crush their opponents. Lies are a mere drop of rain on the porch. Killing's nothing more than a wintry shower compared with the tornado of change that would follow if the voters woke up to the massive abuse and humiliation that they have been subjected to by their elect. I think Americans, in whose army I served as an exchange officer for almost 2 years, should take their toys away and get control by using their veto through advisory referendums. These require no constitutional changes to be approved. The alternatives are a lot bloodier and not worth the candle. So I beseech you to take the peaceful path, the road to referendums. Again, if you don't want to believe me, then see the Church Committee report of 1976 and Operation Mongoose, as this CIA media manipulation operation is generally known and covered in the more open press of the day, lots to follow up on the web. Real news, not the fake stuff. I am not some anarchist Chomsky fanboy. I am a dyed-in-the-wool anti-radical coming from the hard center, but open to what opponents say and to checking out evidence linked to what appear to be reasonable claims. If the facts stand up to scrutiny, I change my mind. Do you? The reason I have used these two examples of juries, finding agencies, and their experienced personnel involved in high-profile killings is to demonstrate what they are capable of and why you should be very wary of them. That's just the way it is when agencies go rogue and start setting people up using agent provocateurs and paid sources to do their bidding. Most importantly, because we know it is intent that counts for a great deal in law, what was Epps doing in the lead-up to the event, during it, and after? Even more to the point, what were the people briefing him and directing him aiming at? Orwell learned an important lesson showing how intelligent people can be easily misled, such as the American people are, about January 6th. He produced a preface for a Ukrainian version of Animal Farm, in which he stated something we should always bear in mind, no matter where on the political spectrum we lie. In Spain, as well as in Russia, the nature of the accusations, namely conspiracy with the fascists, was the same, and as far as Spain was concerned, I had every reason to believe that the accusations were false. To experience all this was a valuable object lesson. It taught me how easily totalitarian propaganda can control the opinion of enlightened people in democratic countries. An experienced analyst, Jacques Ellul, noted in Propaganda, "The formation of men's attitudes that intellectuals are identified as virtually the most vulnerable of all to modern propaganda for three reasons. One, they absorb the largest amount of secondhand, unverifiable information. Two, they feel a compelling need to have an opinion on every important question of our time, and thus easily succumb to opinions offered to them by propaganda on all such indigestible pieces of information. Three, they consider themselves capable of judging for themselves. They literally need propaganda." Ellul went on to note that when propaganda is deployed in democracies, it will be used as the means to hide the reality of the growing powers of the state and governmental and administrative techniques. Propaganda is simply the means used to prevent these things as being felt as too oppressive, and to persuade man to submit with good grace. So I hope that I have shown that the propaganda concerning the January 6th riot has been orchestrated to frame grandmas and shamans wandering around the capital, tying them to malcontents, real or plants, attacking the police. The reports of 5 police dead, coming from President Biden and his Attorney General, are also a lie, which is why they never name them all. Brian Sicknick is sometimes named, but he can be seen on CCTV working in the building after he was allegedly killed outside by a blow to the head. Fake news that even the New York Times had to admit was not the case, though a long time after tarring the crowd with murdering him. So one question, Mr. President. You claim 5 died at the Capitol. Can you please name them? As noted, intellectuals are much more likely to fall for the narrative than the sensible types out there, the latter more likely being the robust thinkers supporting Trump. So once more, who is Ray Epps, and who are those placing pipe bombs, and why are they not all being sought by the sleuths? Our ridiculous representatives are now a dangerous carryover from the past, and the sooner the system hobbles them and becomes hybridized, the better.